As we're working through Genesis, we've seen some remarkable things and some remarkable wonders by our Lord. We're in the account of the life of Jacob. And as far as I can tell at this point, though there are some good Bible scholars that disagree, I don't think Jacob is yet a child of God. I don't think he has come to faith. He's never referred to the Lord in a personal way that you are my God, my Lord. He'll refer to God as the God of my father. Genesis 32, I think, shares with us the account of when Jacob finally submits to the Lord. This morning we're going to be talking about submission to the Lord. And if you're an unbeliever here this morning, if you have never submitted yourself to the lordship of the Lord Jesus Christ, then that's what you must do this morning. God's not going to force you to do it. So when I say must, I mean it's the only logical choice if you want to obey the God of heaven. But for those of you who have submitted to Christ's lordship, the reality is that as believers, sometimes we like to renege on that commitment. We encounter a situation, a circumstance, a person that God sovereignly brings into our life, and we're not quite sure that we like it anymore. And we figure we have a different way of doing it. So the challenge for you this morning is you must submit to Christ's lordship in your life as a believer. God has protected Jacob from Laban, his father-in-law. Sadly, you shouldn't need protection from your father-in-law, but on occasion in our broken world, that happens. Laban chases him down, but God tells Laban, don't touch Jacob. Laban is not a God-fearer in the sense that he's a believer in God. He's not a believer in God, but he has enough respect for God that he obeys even though he's not happy about it. God has protected Jacob from Laban, but you remember there's another danger lurking. Who's that other danger? It's another relative. It's his brother, Esau. Last time Jacob saw Esau, Esau was plotting to kill Jacob. And so Jacob is in danger, but it's something that he has to face. And here's the reality is that when we are not submissive to God, God will arrange circumstances so that we face a situation that is beyond our control. Will Jacob learn to submit to the Lord? Simple message of Genesis 32 this morning is that the only way to prevail with God is to submit to Him. The only way to win with God is to lose, so to speak. You prevail with God by surrendering to Him. We won't cover all of Genesis 32. It's too long of a text this morning. We'll hit a couple highlights in the beginning, and then we'll go to our text here at the end of the chapter. Verse 1 of chapter 32, Moses tells us, as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. Jacob said when he saw them, this is God's camp. So he named that place Mahanaim. The angels of God meet Jacob as he re-enters the land of Canaan. Who were the last people or last beings he encountered as he left the land of Canaan? Angels on the stairway, ascending and descending, and God himself. And so why does God allow these angels to intersect Jacob as he comes back into the land of promise? He's up to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee now. He's just about to cross over into the land of promise. So what are these angels all about? It's representative here of God's continuing commitment to protect Jacob in spite of all his foolishness. God is saying, just like you departed from the land with the blessing that I sent through angels, you're coming back into the land with the blessing of the Abrahamic covenant. My protection is still with you. And so Jacob observes this and he names the place Mahanaim. Probably not a regular part of your English vocabulary, but it basically means two camps. Jacob names the place two camps. Whose camps? Probably one for Jacob and one for God. He recognizes God is in this place. So verse 3, Jacob sends messengers to Esau. He's going to do his dead level best to make sure that if he's going to die, at least he's going to go down swinging. Not literally fighting Esau. Esau is strong. He's accumulated a lot of manpower now. Jacob doesn't want to take him on. He's not looking for a fight. And so he sends Jacob a message. And I won't give you the whole message here, but basically he says, I'm coming back. I have everything I need. I'm not looking to take anything from you. Let's just let bygones be bygones. Sounds simple, but he doesn't know if Esau is going to receive it or not. And so the messengers arrive at Esau, and Esau comes, starts his trek towards Jacob, and Moses tells us he's bringing 400 men with him. So if you're Jacob, what are you assuming? You're probably assuming the worst. I'm a dead man. Esau's coming with his soldiers to exact revenge. So Jacob quickly moves into plan B, which is more than just talking, trying to conciliate Esau. Now he's going to try and bribe Esau, buy him off. So he sends all of these gifts of animals, and he layers them, he staggers them, so that they come one upon another, so that if Esau's motives are bad, that maybe he'll be changed, his heart will be changed by all these gifts, and perhaps it'll give Jacob enough time that maybe he'll be okay. So he stages his family in a safe place, the best he can, here by the brook Jabbok. Now, the brook Jabbok flows on the eastern side of the land of promise, what we would call modern-day Jordan, and it flows into the Jordan River here in between the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee. So that's where we'll pick it up in verse 22. Drop all the way down to verse 22, please. He rose that same night, took his two wives and his two maids, his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Jabbok. So where it was there at this little river, it was shallow enough in this place that he could walk across it. So he fords it. Verse 23, he took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. So he tries to get his family in as safe a place as he can. And apparently he can't sleep. In verse 24, says Jacob was left alone. A man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. I won't ask for a show of hands here because I'm not trying to embarrass anybody if you get the wrong answer. But have any of you ever had an experience where you've wrestled with a supernatural being? Probably most of you have not. I have not, at least not physically. Verse 24 says it was a man. It's a generic word for some sort of being here. So very clearly, as this text unfolds, this is not just any man because he has supernatural powers. So who is this being? Who is this person? Well, in Hosea, an interesting place to find commentary on this account, Hosea chapter 12, verses 3 and 5, which I have there on your handout, says, Jacob in the womb took his brother by the heel, and in his maturity he contended or wrestled with who? With God. Yes, he wrestled with the angel. And don't be confused by angel, because that Hebrew word simply means messenger. This is the messenger of God, who, by the way, is God. He wrestled with the angel and he prevailed. He wept and he sought his favor. And then he goes back even further in Jacob's life. He says he found him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us. God spoke with us, even the Lord, the God of hosts. The Lord is his name. So Hosea says that the being that Jacob wrestled with was the messenger of God, who was God himself, Yahweh himself. In 2 Kings 17, verse 34, the writer describes Israel's disobedience, even though they had been given commands all the way back from the days of Jacob. And he says, to this day they do according to their earlier customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances or the law or the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he named what? Israel. And that'll be later in Genesis 32. So who named Israel? God did. That's who Jacob wrestled with. So Jacob is wrestling God. Do we know which member of the Trinity? No doubt God the Son, the messenger of the Lord. God the Son. Say, wait a second, I didn't think he had taken human form. He hasn't been born as a baby in Bethlehem. That's true. He hasn't come in flesh, but in these Old Testament times, on occasion, he would assume a human appearance, human form, to bring a message, or in this case, to bring a message through a combat. So Jesus temporarily took the form of a man to appear to Jacob here in Genesis 32. And notice, this was not just any kind of wrestling match. This was an all-night affair. Any of you wrestle competitively as a young person? Not like WWF wrestling, but the more typical wrestling. It's not as common sport. My dad grew up in a family of wrestlers. My Uncle Jess, who's in eternity now, he took second in the nation for Division II as a wrestler. I've never wrestled competitively. I don't know how to do it. I don't know the techniques of it. But one time at school, there was a friend named Benj Buck, and we were planning some student activity out at the ball field, and I don't know how it happened, but he said, "Hey, Michael, you want to wrestle?" Well, not really, but how can you turn it down? I preferred things that involved running, not brute strength. But actually, wrestling is not just brute strength. It's a lot of technique, as I found out. And so Benj was a little bit heavier than me. I was probably more athletic than him. But as we were wrestling there, man, he smoked me. He just smoked me, and we probably went for a couple minutes, and I was just exhausted. My cousin Chuck, who wrestled, said it's like running at full speed, running a sprint for about 6 or 7 minutes. It's an exhausting affair. This doesn't last just for 6 or 7 minutes till somebody's pinned. This is an all-night match. When we were down at the Three Sevens Ranch in Utah with Mr. Rick Benson at their Christian camp, their horsemanship camp, about half of the kids that were there in July were Mormons. So it was a very unique opportunity to pour into the lives of these Mormons and try and help them to understand biblical truth. And after the evening service, they would dismiss the kids for a time at the snack shack. They had a little snack shack there, probably about a quarter of a kilometer away from the lodge. And they're in Farron. They're outside of this little town of about 1,900 people. And so it is dark, beautiful stars at night, beautiful lightning storms over the plateaus. And we, Lisa and I, had done some counseling after the service, and so we were headed up towards the snack shack, and it was completely dark. They don't have any light post in between the lodge and the snack shack. And at a distance of probably 300 meters, we hear this chanting and cheering coming from the snack shack, which was not typical. I mean, they had fun at the snack shack, but usually they weren't going, "Ooh, ooh, ooh, ooh." And so Lisa and I are looking at each other, what is going on? And so as we approach the snack shack, we find out, and I didn't ask his permission to use this, so I could be a dead man later. But they decided they were going to have an arm wrestling contest there. And so Carson was arm wrestling his counselor. And we missed it because we weren't there yet. But as it has gone down in folklore, they were locked in mortal combat here in a stalemate for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Now, I don't like arm wrestling, but if you've arm wrestled before, you know that's a long match, a very long match. And so as we're approaching at 300 yards in the darkness, the kids are cheering and they're chanting as Sattler and Carson are locked in a deadlock. And then all of a sudden, Carson gets them down and we hear this, whoa, the place just explodes. Now, I will say on Sattler's benefit, he's a pretty strong dude and he did win the pull-up contest with Carson later that night at the snack shack. But could you imagine an all-night wrestling match? Verse 25, when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated, put out of joint, while he wrestled with Jacob. Please don't misunderstand here, because initially in reading verse 25, you scratch your head as a believer and you think, was Jesus not strong enough to defeat Jacob? Silliness. Of course he was. He's God. So when it says he had not prevailed against him, what does that mean? He's not talking about the physical wrestling match. That doesn't make any sense. In context, what's he talking about? He's trying to accomplish something in Jacob's life, and Jacob is not willing to do what? Surrender yet, right? He's not willing to submit to the lordship of Christ. The wrestling match is a literal physical picture of the spiritual battle that was going on in Jacob's heart. Jacob does not want to submit to the Lord, but the Lord intersects him and says, basically, if you don't submit to me, number one, you're not going to survive Esau, and number two, you're not going to be blessed in the land of promise. So it was really a wrestling match involving, will Jacob surrender to the Lord or will he continue to try and do life his way? Of course, God the Son was strong enough to subdue Jacob. He's God. There's a second factor involved here. Do you realize how old Jacob is at this point? He's probably 97. So he was a strong man for sure. You remember the well and the big stone and impressing the ladies, that sort of stuff. But he's 97 years old. My grandfather is 92, and he's still in wonderful health there in western Colorado. But if I had to choose somebody to represent me in a wrestling match, I wouldn't choose him. It's not an issue of Jacob's superior physical strength and stamina. It's an issue of, will Jacob surrender to the Lord? And yet he has not surrendered. Jacob was not willing to surrender to God and his will. So verse 26, Jesus is ready to leave. And so he says, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. So the sun's starting to come up here. Jesus is ready to go. And Jacob finally realizes here, it finally dawns on him, like the sun that's about to dawn, finally dawns on him, if I don't surrender to the lordship of Christ, he's going to leave and I'm not going to be blessed. And it's finally here, I believe, that Jacob finally surrenders. When Jacob sees that he can't overpower this opponent and that Jesus is going to leave, he realizes he had better submit if he wants to be blessed. And so Jacob holds on to Jesus, not because he's not willing to surrender, but because he's finally realized that the only place of blessing is by clinging to God. Verse 27. So Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" Did Jesus not know what Jacob's name was? Of course, he's God. So why does he ask this question? I believe the reason he asked this question is because when you are going to surrender to God, you first of all have to acknowledge your weakness. Not physically, your spiritual weakness. Remember what Jacob's name means? Esau was mad after he stole the birthright and the blessing, and he says, wasn't he rightly named Jacob because he's done what? He supplanted me these two times. Jacob means heel grabber, supplanter, deceiver. So when Jesus asked Jacob, "Jacob, what's your name?" Believe what Jesus is asking him, "Who are you really, Jacob?" And Jacob has to say, "I'm a deceiver. That's who I am." So when you're going to surrender to God, you have to admit who you really are. You can't say, "Well, it was my mom and my dad. You know, I didn't have the home upbringing that other people have had. I didn't have the spiritual opportunities." You can run down a line of excuses, but until you come and say, "This is who I am by my choices," then you'll never want to surrender to God. And so Jacob says, "Yeah, Lord, I'm a deceiver. That's who I am." But apparently in his heart, he's saying, "I don't want to be anymore." How do we know that? Well, look at verse 28. Jesus said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob. You're not a deceiver anymore. That's not what your character is going to be defined by. Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Jacob had to acknowledge whom he really was before he could be changed. And God says, "I am changing you here." Jesus says, "I am changing your character," because the name reflected nature or character in that day. You are a deceiver, Jacob, but there's a transformation that's going to take place in your life from this night on. And he says, to reflect that transformation, your name is no longer Jacob. Your name is now Israel, which probably signifies God strives, God fights. Reminding Jacob that he fought with God and he lost that night. He surrendered to God. But also signifying here, Jacob, don't worry about Esau. Don't worry about the future battles or opponents you're going to face, because I am going to fight for you and for the nation of Israel. A lot of significance wrapped up in this name. The character change is now from one who's a deceiver, who doesn't have God's full blessing, but now he has a God who will fight on behalf of him. Because the one in authority has naming rights, correct? Yeah, our kids didn't name us. We named our kids. The one in authority has naming rights. God is showing his authority here to change Jacob's name, and the change of name reflects a change in character. God says, "You have struggled with Laban. You have succeeded. Laban was not able to overpower you. You have prevailed." To surrender to God, you must acknowledge your weakness. But number two, you must submit to his strength. Look at the end of verse 28. He says, "You have what? Prevailed." Again, did Jacob win this wrestling match? No, he lost. We would say in modern day terms, he got pinned. He didn't win the wrestling match, so in what way did he prevail? Again, not a physical prevailing, it's a spiritual prevailing. In what way did Jacob prevail? He finally surrendered to God. He finally said, "Uncle," so to speak, "enough, I surrender, I give up, your way." At Kids Club, Pastor Greg will teach the kids the song, "I want your way to be my way." That's how you prevail. You prevail with God by submitting to him. This is counterintuitive towards the way your coworkers think. They think, I will prevail by exerting myself, getting what I want, doing what I want, living my best life now. And Genesis 32 says, no, you prevail by submitting to God. You never win by choosing your way. There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end of it are what? The ways of death. You choose your way, you're headed towards spiritual and eternal ruin, but if you surrender to God's way, you prevail. Peter picks up on this in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5b and 6, where he says, God is opposed to the proud, he resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He says, therefore, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may what? Exalt you in due time. You have to let God pin you if you want God to exalt you. And the reason that some of you are constantly living in frustration in your spiritual life is because you are not surrendered to your Creator. The founder of the Christian university I attended, he would say, your arms are too short to box with God. You cannot win. And God's goal is not to knock you out, but his goal is to bring you to the place of surrender. Why? One, he deserves it as your Creator. And number two, that's the only place where you get grace, strength to obey. So this is the paradox of the Christian life. Victory comes through surrender. Have you ever raised the white flag to the Lord? Said, okay, God, enough of my way. Your way, whatever you want for the rest of my life. One of my dad's brothers, my uncle Eldon, made a profession of faith as a youngster, but then in his older life married an unbeliever and just decided that he was going to be successful. His goal was to be a millionaire. He made it. And that was something back in the 80s, right? I mean, you say it's something still now for sure. I get it. But in the 80s, it was really something. He was a successful pilot in the U.S. Air Force. Well, God brought him to one of these Genesis 32 moments. He lost his wife. His wife divorced him. My Aunt Nancy divorced him. He was in business and real estate in his 40s, and his business partner was a crook. My uncle didn't know it, but they were in a deal for one of the large ski resorts in Colorado, and the business partner was going to pilfer a bunch of money off the deal. Came to my uncle's attention, and the business partner told my uncle, if you tell anybody, I'm going to kill your wife and your kids. So my uncle kept his mouth shut. Well, when it all came out, my uncle ended up going to jail. I remember going to visit my uncle there. It wasn't a full-scale state penitentiary or anything like that, but kind of a halfway house. So I remember going to visit my uncle. He was 50 years old at that time. My dad was talking to my Uncle Eldon, and my Uncle Eldon said this. He said, I had the first 50 years of my life, but I want God to have the last 50. How about you? How many years are you going to have? Or are you going to submit to God's strength? Your arms are too short to box with him. Your strength isn't great enough to wrestle with him. You cannot win in that proposition. You must surrender. So verse 29, Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. Does Jacob not know who he's wrestling? I think he does. So why does Jesus not tell him his name? I think he's saying, you know who I am, Jacob. You know who you're wrestling with. And when Jacob finally surrenders, look at what comes. This is what always comes. Friends, we're so scared that when we give up on our way, as if we could execute it anyways, we're so scared when we give up on our way that God's just going to try and make our life miserable. And sometimes hard things do come. I remember when Lisa's Aunt Sharon, who had already been through multiple physical problems and great difficulties in life, one day in her devotions in her adulthood, probably 15 years ago, she was just reiterating her surrender to the Lord. Lord, you do whatever you want in my life. You rearrange it in any way you want to. And shortly after that, she was in a major car crash and nearly died. And God did rearrange her life. When we surrender to God, we're not giving him permission to do anything. God doesn't need our permission to do anything, right? He's God. So it's not about giving God permission to do anything. It's about getting in line under his will. And when you do that, whatever circumstances God allows in your life, there's always great spiritual blessing. Jacob wasn't a perfected man, but he was a changed man after this night. Because what did he have now? Not only did he have the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant, he had the blessing of being a child of God. And it says God blessed him there. God is going to protect him from Esau and give him great blessing in the land of Canaan. So Jacob here, as the inheritor of the land of Canaan, he has the right to name some spots in it. So that's what he does, verse 30. He memorializes this wrestling match. Jacob named the place Peniel. What does that mean? It means the face of God. For he said, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been preserved. Jacob knows that he's been privileged to see God and that normally you die when you see God as a sinful human being. And yet God wasn't there to kill him. Instead, God was there to bless him. Friends, that's what you got to get about surrender. God's not there to destroy your life. He's there to bless you. God didn't kill him. God blessed him. What God is telling Jacob in this passage, among other things, is don't worry about Esau, Jacob. If you can see God face to face, you can see Esau face to face and live. That's what he's saying. Don't worry about Esau. Don't live in fear, because Jacob is gripped with fear on this night. If you can see God and live, you can see Esau and live. You can see Esau and live too. You've gotten favor from God, and you'll get it from Esau also. So verse 31, now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel. That's the more common name for Peniel, same place, face of God. And he was limping on his thigh. Now we don't know if Jacob continued to limp for the rest of his life. As a reminder, the Bible just doesn't tell us. But at least the next morning, he's got a pretty good limp. Well, as a 97-year-old, you would. But especially if God touched your thigh. Verse 32, Moses notes this interesting custom. It's nowhere else recorded in the Bible. It says, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, so the sciatic muscle. They don't eat the sciatic muscle of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of the hip. As a someone who had just graduated from grade 12, had the privilege of working at a Christian camp in Hawaii, on the Big Island of Hawaii. One of my best friends, Ian, was there working at the camp as well. And we had been together so much. We were, you ever get this way with a friend? It wasn't right, it was carnal, but we were just sick of one another. And so it came to a climax one day, one afternoon there. We were on staff at the camp, and I was having a water fight with somebody, and Ian decided he was going to interfere, and so he dumped me with a bucket of water, and I would say, well, that wasn't a big deal, but we were just tired of each other. We didn't respond in a right way, and so I went after Ian, one of the dumbest things I've ever done, because Ian was a tank. He was thick. He was strong. There was no moving Ian. I was just a skinny kid. And we're wrestling there on the ground. Great testimony in front of the campers, right? We're going at it. And I had so much adrenaline. I'd never overpowered Ian in anything. I had to out-finesse him. I was so jacked up on adrenaline that day, I was socking it to him. I was just letting him have it. And in the back of my mind, I was kind of like, wow, this is unusual. This has never happened before. And the next thing I knew, he had me in a headlock and I could not move. And he was like, say mercy. No. Say mercy. No. And so finally, even in my not fully developed yet 18-year-old brain, I realized I can't get out of this. Ian's got me in a headlock. He's stronger than me. I've already spent the best of my energy. The adrenaline's wearing off. This is dumb. So I said, I surrender. And you know what? We had to be reconciled to each other. We had to ask for each other's forgiveness. But our friendship had never been stronger after that. Some of you may be in that position today with God. He's brought something into your life that you don't like, some person, some circumstance, some trial, some family difficulty, some job change, and you're fighting it, you're resisting it, you're mad at God, you're swinging away, and you just got to realize, what am I accomplishing here? Why am I fighting my Creator? He's not trying to hurt me. But he does want to bless me, and the only way that I can be fully blessed is if I surrender. You see, Jacob didn't see his need for God until God put him in a fix with Esau that he couldn't handle on his own. He had tried to handle everything on his own before, and it had seemingly worked. He didn't realize it was because of God's blessing, but he was highly successful in the world's eyes, and so he didn't see the need for God. Does that sound like Calgary? But Jacob finally met someone he couldn't outwit or overpower. God had to take on a human form to get this message across to Jacob. You will not succeed by relying on yourself. Victory comes through surrender. And there are some of us that are just living like Jacob. Self-autonomy, I'm successful, I've got everything I need. I don't really need to surrender this to God. But this is the principle of Matthew 16, verses 24 to 26, where Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, you must do what? You must deny yourself, you must take up your cross, and you must follow me. You say, well, I don't like that. I like being in control. Look at verse 25. He says, whoever wishes to what? Save his life will lose it. You hang on to it, you try and be in control, you're going to lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world, but he loses his own soul? This was Jacob having to count the cost of saving his life or losing it. He chose to lose it, and he actually found it. Could I ask you, friends, what are you trying to keep under your control? What are you not willing to surrender to the Lord? Maybe it's a sin habit and you say, I want my sin. You can have it, I guess. Or you can have the blessing of God. Maybe a marriage frustration. You're so frustrated with your spouse over something and you think you're fighting against your spouse, but ultimately you're fighting against God's sovereign will in your life. And God's saying, let me pin you so that I can bless you. How about a job situation that you don't like and you're bitter and you're angry and you're depressed? How about your kids? Parents, if you're going to be a good parent, you've got to regularly surrender your kids to the Lord. You need to come to God and say something like, God, you gave them to me to manage and to steward, but they're yours. You do whatever you want with them. If you want them to go to the mission field, that's your decision, God. We surrender these kids to you again. How about your mind? Say what's left of it. I'll surrender to the Lord. That's good. Your health? Think of James Anderson. Years ago, had to surrender this to the Lord when he was in surgery, and the surgeon made a terrible mistake and nicked one of his organs and almost killed him, but altered the trajectory of the Andersons' lives forever this side of eternity. Sure, it was hard, but he didn't get bitter. He didn't fight the Lord. He didn't shake his fist at God. He didn't seek revenge against that surgeon. Almost killed him. Think of Pat and Wally having to surrender Blue 6 or 7 years ago. We're coming up, I think, on the sixth summer that Blue has been in heaven with the Lord, dead of cancer in his 40s. But are Pat and Wally bitter? If you are, tell me later and we'll work through that. But they sure don't seem like bitter people to me, right? Why? Because they surrendered it to the Lord. They surrendered Blue to the Lord. Your aging parents that you don't want to lose. Lisa and I are moving into that stage of life and we don't like it. But you can't fight it. A relationship that you lost or you want to have or you think you should have. Maybe God is calling you this summer. You've recognized the call to the mission field. And you're coming up with all these excuses. Why not? Well, it's not financially stable. It's not safe. I got to be close to mom and dad. And you come up with all these excuses. Surely, God, you could send somebody more qualified. And he's pinpointing you and you're saying no. And he's just saying surrender. Maybe it's a talent that you have that you're using for your glory and not his. Maybe it's just day by day, I like to make my own decisions and I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Well, friends, your lack of surrender is going to put some of you in hell. And I don't say that tritely, and I don't say that because I want it. God doesn't want it either. That's why he gave us Jesus. And here's your opportunity to stop fighting God and thinking that somehow you can outstrong God. And he just wants you to say, God, no more of my way. I've lived long enough for myself. I want to live for you. And for some of you believers, you're born again, but you're in a battle. Who's going to win? God's strong enough just to pin you, but God doesn't usually work through coercion. What choice are you going to make? Will you prevail with God by submitting to him today? Would you bow your heads, please?